Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 47. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srivatsangam Ganeshamam Purisham Dhanamadinam Shantya Chakra Gada Padmai Abhivyakta Chatur Bhajam. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifest with four hands, which holding, beginning from the lower left hand, a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. Purport. Here in this verse, the word Purusham is very significant. The Lord is never female. He is always male. Therefore, the impersonalist who imagines the Lord's form as that of a woman is mistaken. The Lord appears in female form if necessary, but his perpetual form is Purusha because he is originally male. The feminine feature of the Lord is displayed by the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, Radharani, Sita. All these goddesses of fortune are servitors of the Lord. They are not supreme as falsely imagined by the impersonalists. Lord Krishna's Narayan feature is always four-handed. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna wanted to see his universal form, he showed his feature as four-handed Narayan. Some devotees are of the opinion that Krishna is an incarnation of Narayan, but the Bhagavad school says that Narayan is a manifestation of Krishna. Om Vijnana Jamarandasya Jnanam Jahashilakaya Daksur Mulatam Yena Asmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadabhayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Vipashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vidadhar Srivat Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. Yeah, I came yesterday. I did a program at Prema Yoga. It was really wonderful, about 40 people. And I got to speak of a new subject called The Joy of Seva. Hoping to get a tape of it. It's really interesting because I didn't really want to speak on that topic because I have so many things to do, but the owners of the studio were insistent, which meant I had to prepare a new subject. But it was very rewarding, especially to teach about really the most important subject, which is not activity, but consciousness. And to speak about what that consciousness is, there's prema, there's bhakti, and there's seva. Prema means to please people by, please someone by various means. That's what the root of prema is. And of course, the way it's used, there's a literal meaning, but the meaning in usage is when that desire to please is at the highest extent. It's, of course, in Parama Prema Rupa, it's the highest form of love, which is to God, which manifests when there is nothing else in the heart but service. That's self-realization for the Vaishnavas. When there's nothing in the heart but service, that's the real you. And when you purify your heart and you're living there, then you see God everywhere, God manifests everywhere, and you feel God everywhere, and that feeling to please, it is prema, but it's manifest to the highest degree. And in the chapter Shloki Bhagavatam, that's why in the four verses that sum up the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that's why when the third verse, which describes prema, it describes prema as a vision where you see God within and without, inside and outside of everything. Because premanjana charita bhakti vilochena, we're covered by ignorance. When Guru reminds ignorance, then premanjana charita. Then you when you see with the eyes of love, then you can see what's there. Our attitude affects our perception because reality is personal. It reciprocates with love. Therefore, when you have that love in your heart, reality manifests itself. The reality of any person manifests themselves in love. The ultimate being is personal. The ultimate reality is personal. It reveals itself in love. So when that consciousness becomes selfless, purely, and there's no other desire in the heart, the consciousness becomes so thick, we're not even thinking of anything else but service. It becomes overwhelming. Just like if someone in the, I think the, which story, I think it's the Brahma Vimal Nila in the beginning, and Sukadeva Goswami is very excited to speak to Maharaj Prickett, because in Maharaj Prickett's attitude, he said, that's what the Paramahamsa is, the Paramahamsa, the topmost devotee. He sees service everywhere. He sees God just as a lusty man sees through that vision. But that vision, the vision of selfishness, closes reality. Reality closes to exploitation. The reality manifests towards service. Therefore, you can only see the absolute truth when you desire to serve the absolute truth. So there's prema, there's bhakti. Bhakti means to worship or to serve. And then there's seva, which has more an aspect from its root meaning to physical service. It was interesting because in trying to present this subject, I was I thought it would be helpful to quote the verse in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I describe there's four options. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, can't do this. I described it in relationship to seva, because I explained that ultimately The highest seva is when the seva is born for love, from love. You can do seva to attain love without really having that. And not only is the highest seva is when the love is universal. So you're seeing service everywhere. And then the progression is that you can't do that. They have the willpower to develop that by practicing devotional. And you can't do that, then work. Then do something physical. Even if the mind is not there, because the tendency of the mind is to follow. The tendency of the mind is to follow the body. Anyway, we explored that subject deeply, where someone doesn't do things for his personal enjoyment, he does things as an offering of service. And we discussed the subtleties of how much, and I challenged him, how much that selfish mood enters in and compromises our sincerity. But another thing, I'll get to this first. It's just interesting to share with you. It was really an educated class of people. You know, the class was in downtown, not in Brooklyn Heights, which is quite a good neighborhood. I mean, the people there were definitely professional class of people. And, you know, I always say that as important as speaking the truth is having the truth understood. And what happened is I spoke for 2 hours, and then because another yoga class was there, we moved down the street where we kind of rented this little room for question and answer. And so many of the ladies had the same question. And it was very, very interesting because I understood on a deeper level the frame of reference of my audience, which I'll carry in my, I don't know if you call it repertoire, my understanding of things. Is that many people, quite a few, 3-4 ladies in a row, were having a problem with the term selfless as coming to the point of sacrificing their own needs. They kept on harping on this. Interesting. In different ways, I mean, round, mental, this, different ways it came to the point. I tried to explain to them that, you know, let's say you wanted an altruistic work and you wanted to deliver food someplace, that fixing the car is part of that service. So, you know, if you want to be altruistic, taking care of yourself is part of that service. I said, just think of the airline. The stewardess says, put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help your child. I kept on going up, but they kept on going on and kept on going on. And then the leader of the studio, who's quite a substantial person, I would say, the leader of the studio said, this is a problem with women. He said, they never think they're doing enough. And they always feel guilty for taking care of themselves. And she said, I think it's both nature and nurturing. It's both the way the society is, but I guess mother means love. And that becomes the prominent psychology. Anyway, it was just interesting that this was, maybe it was a particular type of women, but this was the particular type of mindset. Just very interesting. So I'll put that in my seminar that you really have to, you know, explain so clearly. But even people wouldn't understand that part of being selfless is also taking care of yourself. It doesn't have to be selfish. Anyway, getting to the verse at hand, as you remember, I identified it. Narada Muni, he was insulted. He just couldn't drop it. And it was almost okay. We always expected that the training and the nature of a kshatriya cultivates a certain kind of pride, or that has to be purified, not transcended, has to be purified by its use in service. As Prabhupada said, if America was Krishna conscious, he referred to some war. The president would say, if you harm one hair on the head of our band, there'll be fight. So it almost seems to be kind of an unnecessary thing. And I saw that in Indian kshatriyas. They can be so serving and humble and altruistic, but there was a certain pride, a certain pride of our strength and our courage. And so Dhruva had that. He couldn't follow, and he said, Narada, show me compassion. Narada showed him compassion, and used his determination and used his faith in his mother's instructions and used his own understanding that what is best for Dhruva is to worship God intently and really worship God and really focus for our consciousness of God and use that spirit he had of determination and stamina. Stamina means the ability to undergo prolonged mental and physical duress. It's one of the main characteristics of a kshatriya. So kshatriyas can also perform austerity, but it's not from the platform of, not so much from the platform of understanding, as much as from the platform of their gut, they're determined that there's something. In sports, we say, leave it all on the field. Leave it all on the field. So Narada told them what to do. He wasn't qualified enough to be detached and drop it. But he was qualified enough to practice bhakti, at least the form of bhakti, to the most intense degree. And then we're up to the section where Narada gives him the outline, a basic outline of kind of Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means you detach yourself from the world by performing austerities for the purpose of focusing on Krishna. But it may be a little bit initially, the main focus may be on the austerities, but the goal is to prepare yourself to focus on Krishna. That's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. So he told him the first important thing is the place. have a place and time for spiritual life. Environment is very powerful effect on consciousness. We explained this many times. At least in your house, you should have a sacred space. Of course, the best space is a holy place. And then you should cultivate the mode of goodness, and the most important thing is bathing. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Cleanliness is the object of sight and the mode of goodness. And as our eyes are open, whatever's in our environment will mold our consciousness to the same shape in which that environment is. When I say shape, I mean mode. And then he said then you should have a sitting place, an asana, and then you should practice pranayama and pratyahara, basically Ashtanga yoga. And then when you do the preliminaries of yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, when you do the preliminaries, jnana nishtha bhakti, then use the free mind to meditate and focus on Krishna, dharana, jnana, samadhi. So then he asked him to meditate. And then he explains what to meditate on. Because in bhakti, we meditate on the form of God. So he says, this is what you meditate on. And this is the beauty of bhakti, that the object of meditation is not just a prop, but it can reciprocate with us. And we can engage the senses. Bhagavad Gita, it says we cannot stop doing something even for the moment. The 12th chapter, Krishna asks, which is better, to meditate on the personal form of God or the impersonal? So the personal is much better. We have senses, and the senses can be completely purified. The senses, we generally, what the senses do is it's the medium between the world and the mind. And depending on your ego, if your ego is, I am the controller and enjoyer, I am a woman, I am a man in a particular way, then the senses will interact with the world and view the world according to that identity. But if the ahankara is altered from the concept that I am the enjoyer of the world to I am the servant of the world, then the senses will interact in the world to serve the right conception of life rather than to serve the false conception of life and build the one in the material world. Because then the eyes, which like to see beautiful things, the eyes will look at Krishna in the meditation. And the ears, which like to interact the sounds that stimulate the lower modes or the modes of nature, will listen to sounds that are very pleasing but stimulate the soul. And that's the beauty of bhakti. I was discussing that yesterday when I was explaining seva. Because it's selfless, it doesn't mean that you have to do things that you don't like. Rather, the things we like in bhakti, we can offer with the most devotion. So he describes, therefore, the form of the Lord. And now he's continuing here. And describing his color, he's a lord. He's a person, and as a person, he has tastes. He likes flowers. He likes garlands. He's a person. Those tastes are not by if God's tastes are not by his previous activities. It's not by his karma that he's got those tastes. But that is the nature of his being. To be love and create beauty for love, and therefore create beautiful things as a vehicle for that love to be expressed in. God creates beautiful things for the purpose of bhakti, both to create a medium by which people's love can be expressed to him, and a medium by which he can reciprocate that love by pleasing others by his beauty. God's beauty is a manifestation of his heart, that he wants to please those who love him. And therefore he likes flowers. And here in the purport, Prabhupada was stressing that God is male form. It's not a male form like ours, but it's a male form. And he has a female form. As the supreme servitor. But the tendency when people see this, either for it or against it, these kind of gender distinctions, the tendency of people is so much to make it one-dimensional rather than aspect. That an aspect of the male form that all things considered equal have advantages. And there's an aspect of the female form, the female person, or the male person. So the problem is when people take an aspect of superiority and make it a category of superiority, or make it an existentially superior. I find that in the Western reductionist mind, everything becomes black and white. Eastern mind was more easily, I feel, initially enabled to harbor different conceptions and either reconcile or let them sit without disturbance. And therefore, there's a danger when the Western mind, when the patriarchal culture of the East, or the aspect of patriarchalism in the East, is transferred to the West, it becomes the reality and not an aspect. This is my own speculation. You can get me wrong. I'm just thinking like that. It's a thought that came to my mind where applied in the perfect conception in an Eastern tradition, which also, of course, can exploit it, I think perhaps would be to accommodate patriarchy, but also empower the woman at the same time. and I think the proof of that is that in the East, from India to Burma to Sri Lanka to even Pakistan, there was no problem with having a woman president and accommodate both conceptions, not feeling it was a threat to the conception of motherhood or a certain patriarchy that was there. Just, I'm just, you know, people could ask about that. And it's interesting, he manifests four arms. And that's also for his opulence, his beauty, and it's his power, and he displays it and is adorned. Everything is very attractive out of his mercy. His beauty is to please. His beauty is to attract. His beauty is to create rasa. His beauty is therefore to create happiness for everyone. Okay, next verse, 48. Kritinam kundalinam keyor balaya. Valaya Bitam Kashtuha Barana Grivam Bita Koshe Shavasanam. The entire body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is decorated. He wears a valuable jeweled helmet, necklaces, and bracelets. His neck is adorned with the Kastuba jewel, and he is dressed in yellow silk garments. So, he's got a jewel. But what does jewel mean for God? It means more valuable one jewel than all the jewels on earth. It can't be compared to anything we see today. What if we see God and we see his jewels? A jewel, one jewel, which is more precious, more luster, more beautiful than all the jewels in the world. What would it be like if we actually saw that jewel, which is a manifestation of love? Just like Radharani, she has many ornaments, how beautiful those ornaments may be, but it's composed of Mahabhav Swarup, the desire to please. She wants to please Krishna. She wants to offer the best. And the best is her. She wants to be the most beautiful. That love actually manifests the jewel. Composed of the same love. Love is the announcement, I want you happy. And those jewels announce that. I want you happy. Panchakalapa paryastam vasat kachana nuparam darshani yattamam shantim mano nayana vardhanam. The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist. His lotus feet are decorated with small golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eye. He is always peaceful and calm and quiet and very pleasing to the eyes and the mind. So Krishna would wear his belt very tight because he would have to face demons. And he will also make it tight because he would hold his flute and his cow stick, etc. And then his ankle bells. When he walks, the bells around his waist, the bells around his feet, ching, 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 ching. All this, he says, he's walking, and the sound, his beauty, the jewels on him, all connected with love, and the sounds of the bells in his lotus feet, and his bluish hue, and his garland and his four hands, and it's all beautiful and everything's decorated and it's inspiring devotion. Vabhyam Makamani Shreyam Vilasabhyam Samarchikam Vipadmakani Hadisbhyam Akramyatma Vibhastikam. Real yogis meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands on the whorl of the lotus of their hearts, the jewel-like nails of the lotus feet glittering. So his nails are like jewels. And the nails on the Lord's feet are shining with unparalleled effulgence. So everything about the Lord is unparalleled. And it's a manifestation of this existential love, this intense love, wanting to please, wanting to inspire the whole world in relationship with reality so that they can swim in the deepest nectar of happiness and freedom. Svayamanam adityayet sanuragavalokanam niyatenaikabhutena manasa varadarshavam. The Lord is always smiling, and the devotee should constantly see the Lord in this form. In this way, the meditator should look towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. So it's interesting, the Lord is smiling, but this smile here is described as smayamanam. So the smile, when it's a smile without the teeth fully showing, is called Amaya. Amaya. Smayamanam. His smile, and it's the reflection of constant happiness, as if the laughing is internal rather than a state of mild pleasure. In other words, when a smile where the teeth are not showing, but it's a reflection of deep internal satisfaction, that is the most potent and powerful smile. And that's the Lord's smile. And sometimes we see people, they're not laughing, they're not artificially smiling, but there is joy and purity that manifests, which curls their ends in their mouth up in a very pleasing way. The word niyatena is very significant in this connection, for it indicates that one should execute the meditation practice as stated above. So it says niyatena in this way. One should not manufacture a way of meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He should follow the authorized shastras and personality. By this prescribed method, one can practice concentration upon the Lord until one is so fixed that he remains in trance, thinking always of the form of the Lord. So, it began here. We had asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana. This is samadhi. That this method of gradually meditating on the Lord, you remain fixed in a trance, always thinking of the Lord. In other words, it should come to a point where it's so alluring and so attractive. So alluring and so attractive. That we're not cognizant of anything else but the beauty of those shining effulgence on the nails and that smile of internal contentment and absolute jubilation and jewels where nothing else in the world can compare to. The word here used is eka bhutena, which means with great attention and concentration. One concentrates on the description of the bodily features of the Lord, one will never fall down. Okay. I'm going to stop here. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Well, I have so many questions, but I'll try to pare it down to two.
Okay.
Okay, you said that there is a male aspect that is superior. I was wondering if you could describe that. You also said that his male form is not like ours here. So I don't know if you have to be self-realized to really get an understanding of what.
I don't remember saying that it's not like here. Man is made in the image of God. There's a connection. Well, anyway, the woman's form has a certain beauty. The man's form has a different type of beauty. The man is more suited for protection. The woman is more suited for nurturing. So there are different qualities and different aspects, all things being considered, because, you know, you can't take a sudra man and then a Brahmin woman and then say, you know, men are more intelligent. All things considered, if you take everything considered equal, there's a certain more analytical side and more emotive side. They all have their advantages. The man's body is stronger. You know, that may be an advantage in certain ways. It may carry a Purusha Bhav in another way, make it less nurturing. So there are definitely differences. And I said that the point is where you make that not just an aspect of that particular form or something, but the total reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. Also, you know, Arjuna and Dhruva, they were both kshatriyas, you know, neither of them could like just drop it, you know?
Yeah.
Like if Arjuna had gone off to the forest to see what Dhruva did, you know, he would have been meditating on the whole thing. But so even though they were both kshatriyas and neither of them could drop it, it seemed like Arjuna was not qualified to go off to a forest, whereas Dhruva was. Even though neither of them could just drop it, leave it on the field.
But you see, Arjuna wanted to go to the forest for a different reason.
Yeah.
Which was basically against his Kshatriya nature. And Dhruva went to the forest in pursuance of his Kshatriya nature.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Well, actually, now that you mention it, one thing, I mean, this is like a recurring theme for me, but as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't feel selfless when you are doing something, quote unquote, for Krishna that you like. You know? So I don't know how to address that.
Well, you may like something, but it doesn't mean, well, no, that's something different. Because when you say when you like something, you think something is best. I'll explain that if it's not what the answer is, but what you're thinking, he'll tell me. When you say you like something that is best, right, you like it the best, but it's selfless because you like it the best, but you're not doing it for yourself. You're offering what's best to someone else.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. Even though, I don't know.
It's just your judgment of what is best. It's not,
yeah,
it's not that you're thinking, because I like it, I'm offering it. No, you're thinking, this is the best thing. You know, you go to an Italian's house, and they offer you pizza and spaghetti. They think it's the best thing.
Okay.
I remember one time in Mayapur, Gorpriya lived across the in her apartment, across the her room, she lived across from someone who's called the Spaghetti King. And he was there with his father from, and a whole Italian family, and you know, and he had me over, and he was marketing spaghetti. It's, he had all kinds of varieties of pasta. And he was so excited about it. And he was offering it to me with love.
Wow.
Of course, if you find out that the person really hates pasta and you still want to give it to him, now that's not love.
Well, Maharaj, after all these decades of you giving this example, this is the first time I understood it properly.
Okay. Okay. One more, Gail.
Okay, yeah. Actually, there's only one more I have. yeah, in the before you started talking about the verse today, you were discussing the distinction between, I think it was prema and bhav and seva.
Prema, bhava, and seva. Okay, what happened is I was doing this lecture, and the place is called Prema Yoga.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a good opening for the lecture. So I said, what's the connection between the name of the place, the people who run it, and the topic today, right? So the answer was, the place was named Prema Yoga. The people really have this spirit. And seva is very similar to prema. Then I have a Sanskrit pundit, and I sent him and asked him for the derivatives. And he gave different derivatives for each term. So I asked him, what's the derivative? So he gave the root of prema, which was pleased by various means. He gave the root of bhakti, which is something else, which means to worship. And he put in parentheses, you know, physical and mental. And then he gave the root for seva, which indicated physical only. So I was going to make that distinction, especially. The reason why they wanted me to talk about seva is to promote practical spiritual life. So I described how that was so.
You know.
Okay.
You
yeah.
Know. Okay. Yeah.
What?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Hi, Bill. Would anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
I love those voices.
Hari Bol,
thank you. Hari Bol. Good, I love them all. Some more? Anybody else?
Hari Bol, Maharaj.
Hari Bol.
Take care of your prayer.
Thank you. Anybody else say hello?
Thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll end for now today. Bunch of call producers.